Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Thursday, August 23rd, 2007, the only August 23rd, 2007 in the history of humanity. Always want to keep in mind that this is not a dress rehearsal, ladies and gentlemen. This is the only go-around we get, so let's make the best out of it. And we have chosen to do that tonight on this particular Thursday evening, and also have chosen to have one of the outstanding guests that we've ever had on the history of the Glenn Klein Online webcast, not just because of who he is, but what he's done. Please welcome online the producer and director and the co-writer of the documentary About Face, Mr. Stephen Kara. Stephen!
Thank you. I liked how you said 2007. I think more people should refer to the aught.
You know, no doubt. And, you know, in fact, I made a bold prediction and statement when the century changed to this current century. You know, they didn't say 1922. Everyone says 2003. No, I said that one day, just like they used to say 1903 or 1907, that people would say 2007 or 2007. And I started that 7 years ago. And if you watch in the media now, you will hear people referring to 2007. I started that. I want you to know that right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on your film. I understand you just came away with an award. We're going to, of course, talk about it, what the film's about. But why don't you tell us about the award and how all that happened?
Well, the award is just a, well, not just, I don't want to minimize anything, but it was a jury, you know, the jury recognized our film out of several, I think 35. It was a, I think it was just a jury prize. I don't know what they're calling it, but it was at the Stony Brook Film Festival, and it was really exciting. You know, we haven't really been showing the film that much, you know, for business reasons. You know, we were looking for distribution, so we can't really premiere it at several different festivals. So it was nice to get recognized. It's nice when people say nice things about you.
Well, I'm going to just read the first paragraph in the story on your website, and you can visit Stephen's website at aboutfacefilm.com. It's aboutfacefilm.com. This film is a feature-length documentary that tells the remarkable yet previously untold story of thousands of young Jewish immigrants who fled Germany and Austria in the early days of Hitler's regime, only to perform an about-face, returning to confront their oppressors as American GIs and British Tommies in World War II. All right, so that intrigues me just right off the bat. But how does a Jewish kid from Chicago, like yourself, get involved in a story like this that really has been untold up until now?
I think just it was born out of a general interest that I had in, I guess, Jewish history in the 20th century. And, you know, really being from a family that wasn't touched by the Holocaust, but, I mean, at least personally. I mean, we might have had cousins somewhere in Europe, but distant cousins, but you know that my uncles had fought in the American Army and had fought against the Germans and had fought in Europe, and I thought that was, you know, something. In addition to, you know, being fascinated with, let's say, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which was one of the bright points in Jewish bravery in that era, you know, which is basically come to think of the Jews as victims. So, you know, being from the North Shore, I don't know, I just always been interested in history, and I was really not doing much of anything. I was 28 when I started. I was waitering and playing music in Chicago, and it was just such a fluke because it happened right around the time that the internet started getting big, and I put an ad out on a website, an infantry division website, asking if anyone knows about these particular soldiers who had been born in Austria and in Germany and had the opportunity to go back. And someone had actually read this post, sent it to a friend, and then about a week and a half later, 30 people had called me. And that was just the beginning of, you know, over 100 interviews that I did. But I should also say, you know, I at Camp Menominee, where you presided and owned for I don't know how many years, but as a camper, there was a counselor named, I think it was Roger Fields. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Roger Fields' father, his name was Dingfelder, and Siegfried Dingfelder. And I remember Roger telling me that his father had been in the Army and went back as a counterintelligence officer to his hometown in Germany after having been thrown out of there just a few years earlier. And that story always stuck with me. And I just recently tracked down the guy, the father of this particular counselor. And when I told him, I said, you know, you're one of the reasons why I started doing this project. And then to me, it's this monolithic thing. And he was like, oh, thanks. It was so anticlimactic.
This is like the biggest thing in your life. And he was like, no problem.
Yeah, no problem. You know, but it meant something to me, you know, whether it does to him. But it's funny how, you know, it's such a close-knit group. Those who are still alive, a lot of them know each other because they settled in the same neighborhoods in New York when they left Germany or in Chicago. And so the sheer volume of interviewees came from, you know, word of mouth. You know, it's they know each other.
We're talking with Stephen Karas, the director, co-writer, and co-producer of About Face, a film about how Jewish, primarily men, escaped during Hitler's early regime in Germany and Austria and came back to the United States, or not came back to, but came to the United States and to Great Britain, trained, and then went back to help liberate Germany and Austria and all of Eastern Europe. You met a lot of these folks, didn't you, Stephen?
Well, I interviewed several of them. You know, it's I started in 99, in October of 99, and I think the last interview I did was 2004, just
wow.
In time to finish the film. We were in Normandy for the 60th anniversary of D-Day with two gentlemen that had landed at, you know, on H-Hour on Sword Beach and Omaha Beach, one being in the British military, the other in the United States Army. So, yeah, I've been blessed. I mean, I interviewed Henry Kissinger, who is probably the most well-known of the refugees who became soldiers, and his experience in the military and military government was certainly seminal in what, you know, later became this, you know, this great figure in public life. You know,
well, and of course, you know, Henry Kissinger, of course, with that thick German accent, was always known as a tough son of a bitch, and to this day. And yet, in your film, which I was honored to be there at the premiere in Chicago for,
yeah,
he gets glossy-eyed, he gets teary-eyed, telling the story about what happened to him.
It's weird. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's such a hard-edged guy. I mean, there's some funny stories. I mean, we got there early, and we were setting up, and he poked his head in, and he said, "You know, you'll interview us for like 40 minutes." And I said, "You know, well, we thought we'd get an hour," and he said, "Well, you could negotiate the other 20 minutes." So,
you know, what a great, maybe the greatest line ever of Henry Kissinger.
Negotiate, you could negotiate. Yeah, and
Kissinger said, and he said many times, "Power is the greatest aphrodisiac."
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize this guy was a sex symbol in the 70s, believe it or not. You know, he was a big deal. But, well, you know, it was sort of daunting. But at the same time, you know, when you're talking about your life from, you know, 13 until 21 or 22, you're just like anybody else. And I had interviewed men that had known him in Firth, where he was from, and in Washington Heights in New York, where, you know, they called that the Fourth Reich because it was comprised of so many German immigrants living there. And, you know, he went to temple with the synagogue with these guys. He went to George Washington High School in Washington. You know, just everyone kind of knew each other.
Well, just because,
enclave.
Just because you do interview many people during the course of the About Face film, but because he's the best known, let our listeners know exactly what his story was.
Kissinger, not unlike the other stories, he fled to the U.S. Most of these gentlemen. And some women had appeared in the film as well and had been interviewed for the project. They had left Germany just in time, you know, before, you know, the borders would have been closed in 1939, you know, when they invaded Poland and the war started. They left Germany, you know, after having endured, you know, the first 5 or 6 years of the Nazis. Some left earlier than the others, but anyway, so Kissinger's family had left in 1938. His father was a teacher, a history teacher, and his mother had gotten an affidavit from an uncle who was living in New York. And so he came to New York, and like any, you know, they were enemy aliens. They couldn't enlist. So when the war started, they waited and they got drafted. So he, like many others, went to Fort Dix, went to Spartanburg, South Carolina for his basic training, and then went to Europe in the 84th Infantry Division and was actually a combat rifleman, you know, for, you know, a couple months before being transferred to a counterintelligence unit and served as a translator and then, you know, obviously later in military government. And I think that that's where he first really started to enjoy the spoils of power. You know, I read someone's diary and said, oh, I stopped and saw Heinz Kissinger in Crayfield, and you should see his spread. He's living in an old Nazi's chateau, and he's got the Nazi's wife as a girlfriend. So that's the story.
Blonde-haired, blue-eyed babe is what you're saying, right?
Exactly, yes. But I actually called Kissinger because I'm trying to write a book on an oral history, and I wanted to see if he would write the blurbs in the back of the book saying this is a great book. So he accidentally picked up the phone, and I think that he was so annoyed that I called and that somebody lost their job that day that I passed through to him.
We're talking with Stephen Karas, who, if you're interested, you can contact Steve about writing a blurb for his book, because apparently Henry Kissinger will not be. At aboutfacefilm.com. The film is a story about the thousands of young Jewish immigrants who fled Germany and Austria in the early days of Hitler's regime and then returned, or went about face, if you will, to confront their oppressors. You can email us your questions tonight, as always, at coach@glennkleinonline.com. That's coach@glennkleinonline.com, because I am your coach for life. That's a good... Glenn Klein Online. It's kind of like about face. It's got a good ring to it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Well, I remember talking to you when you were just starting to produce the film about a name. And literally, I don't think that there could be a better double entendre than about face. I mean, it's about saving face. It's literally turning around and going back. And what a story it is, Stephen. I mean, You must have been just amazed at sitting there listening to these guys tell their stories.
Oh, my hair, you know, even when I watch the raw footage from the interviews, my hair still, you know, in the back of my neck stands on end. You know, they are phenomenal stories. I've always said that they rival fiction, you know, the best fiction. And it's harrowing escapes and, you know, this triumphant return. I mean, obviously, it's not so black and white. There's a lot, it's far more complex, and there's a lot more gray. You know, when I started doing it, I was so excited to hear revenge stories. You know, when you're brought up and weaned on Holocaust history, and you're very used to hearing this horrible tale of, you know, the destruction of European Jewry, you know, you want to hear revenge stories. And I found that I wasn't hearing that many.
Yeah, I thought it was great how you juxtaposed people who did want revenge with those really that had no interest in revenge at all. They just wanted to see their people freed and the war won just like everybody else.
Absolutely, and you got to remember that these men, having been pariahs in Nazi Germany and Austria, were given this incredible privilege and citizenship, you know, within just a few years. And you know, they went to intelligence school, they were treated like anybody else, and they were so proud. And I think that their greatest motivation was to live up to this privilege, live up to what was expected of them as citizens. And you know, it became a real American story, if anything else, and I think that that's why it's been so appealing. I've also been interested to know that even in the current war on terror, that the CIA isn't using native speakers in the war on terror. You know, you have units in Iraq right now that are without American translators.
Yeah, you think they get a clue. And of course, because of our don't ask, don't tell policy,
right.
A handful of perfectly good Arab translators and speakers who happen to be either gay or lesbian were thrown out of the military because of their
right.
sexual orientation. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's thousands of people. I mean, these are refugees too, and political dissidents that have wound up in America. And it's true. The CIA will not utilize these people because they're security risks. And the people that came from Germany and Austria were enemy aliens. They were security risks. Oddly enough, you know, even though that they had fled those areas, but, you know, who can you trust in wartime? You know, they interned Japanese Americans.
Exactly. So, that's just good old-fashioned racism right there.
Right. So, I mean, there's certainly, you know, tens of thousands who speak, you know, Urdu and Farsi and Arabic. I mean, it's, and so I think that from what I've read and from what I've talked to people, you know, intelligence is the most important weapon in this war, and we're lacking in it right now.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Stephen Karas, who's the director, co-writer, and producer of the documentary About Face. And Stephen, one of the interesting things that came out of the film, I thought, was how these men were strategically placed throughout our military, because our military leaders, who apparently seem to be more in tune than they are now with the psychology of human beings, knew that these particular Jewish men, given their set of circumstances, would be super motivated to go in and finish the job. And so they had them strategically placed throughout the military, didn't they?
Certainly. You know, the running theme, at least when I was interviewing people, a lot of them went to an intelligence school at Camp Ritchie, Maryland, which no longer exists, but they were trained, you know, as order of battle specialists, counterintelligence, you know, interrogators. So I think that they were strategically placed, let's say, as frontline interrogators in various divisions, you know, as they moved, you know, closer and closer to Berlin, because as anyone knows, a good interrogator finds out exactly what's in front of them, so the troops can advance. So I think that they were strategically placed, and, you know, the United States Army and Great Britain really found some good motivated soldiers out of it. They were certainly motivated. They knew what it was like to. They knew the Nazis. You know, they knew these people. They had been completely outcast, maligned, and they certainly would know so much more about them than, let's say, someone from Omaha, Nebraska. Not to minimize anyone from Omaha, but these guys they knew the enemy, and they knew what was at stake. You know, they went back with tremendous risk to themselves. You know, if captured, they'd be immediately executed. Many had family members still trapped in Germany, either in concentration camps or in hiding, and so yeah, that's strategically placed. Yes, I think that they were just there. I think that them just being there, the Army got a really good deal out of it.
No doubt.
Not to say that they won the war single-handedly. You know, this is a small amount of people. We're talking tens of thousands, maybe like a little over 12,000 people. And you know, because you got to consider, like, only 300,000 or 250,000 German Jews and Austrian Jews made it to the U.S.
But it still was an incredibly important decision that they made to
absolutely
not only to strategically place them, but as we said, given the analogy with the war on terror, just to have them involved at all.
Exactly. There's a great line in the film. I think it's anyone gets a chance to see it, which hopefully they will. You know, we're going to be selling them on our website. Probably in the next couple months, but someone said, you know, people who had been through it said, you know, we've already been through it, let someone else fight it. And someone said, no, this is ours. You know, look what they're doing to our friends and family. Look what they're doing now. The only way to end this is if we strike back. And that was the case. They were motivated beyond belief.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Steve Karas, who is the director and co-writer and co-producer of About Face. This email comes to us from Sacramento from Thomas Stephen. He says, how does the historic Jewish victims mentality, with its cataclysmic effects, do you think inform the decisions that are made today by the nation of Israel?
Can you read that one more time? I'm trying to understand.
This is Thomas from Sacramento. He says, how do you think that the historic Jewish victims mentality, with its cataclysmic effects, informs the decisions by the nation of Israel?
You know, it's a tricky question. You know, I don't know if there's you know, every group has a victim's mentality, you know, to a certain extent. Now, I don't know if everything is dictated by what had happened in during the Holocaust. I think that it definitely had an incredible effect on world Jewry. Like, look, you know, almost 2/3 of world Jewry were eliminated.
But you've been to Israel enough times as have I. I mean, the Holocaust mentality so permeates the atmosphere there. I think, you know, it's an insightful question. I mean, they have the whole concept of, you know, the Masada plan, which is, you know, if we're going down, we're taking the whole thing with us. And I think that this is one of the fascinating things about your movie, is that certainly during the period of the Holocaust and the pogroms and relatively recent Jewish history, the Jews have been portrayed, and I think realistically so, as just people that were just beaten up and just kicked from one country to the next. But your story in About Face tells a different mentality, a different perspective. And I'm wondering, the history of the Jews being maligned worldwide, I think is a good point that Thomas makes, not only in Israel, but to this day, it does affect Jewish thinking, doesn't it?
It does to a certain extent, but you have to understand that this is not the only example of Jewish courage. I think the sheer fact that a group of people who have existed for thousands of years without a country of their own, you know, in the worst set of circumstances, and have maintained this core set of beliefs and ethics, is truly a testament to it's a testament to courage itself. You know, now the Holocaust mentality, you know, it's an interesting question that this gentleman asks, because I always thought that, you know, when I first started doing this, that people did not want to hear about this particular story, because it's contrast to what other people, you know, perceive as you know, Jewish courage in the 20th century, you know, specifically in Europe, where, you know, there were a few events, but
your film is not Anne Frank, it's not Schindler's List. I mean, it's not about the death camps and the ghettos and all that. It's about soldiers.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I mean, to ask me about Israel and everything, you know, this, I have to keep it specific to this film, because obviously, you know, I live in Los Angeles. My landlord is a former Israeli paratrooper who fought in the Yom Kippur War, and he's also really religious, and he doesn't really, you know, the discussion of the Holocaust doesn't come up. I don't know if anyone could really intellectualize, you know, when you're living in a country that's constantly, you know, under attack. You know, there's a siege-like mentality. I don't think people say, well, it's because the Holocaust that we're doing all of this. But that's really my opinion. I think that a victim, and, you know, people have victim mentality, like the Nation of Islam, that they're not certainly, they certainly don't reflect what, you know, black American thinks. It's just there's a small group of people. There are people that, you know, you might want to say that the Holocaust is their cultural identifier, you know, as Jews. You know, for me, it's much different.
Point well taken. And Thomas, thanks for taking the time to write to this webcast known as Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Steve Karas, who is the director, co-writer, and co-producer of About Face. So this is a great documentary film, and I highly encourage people to go to the aboutfacefilm.com website. But tell the story, Steve, about the one German, American German, by this time, interrogator, who is interrogating the German general, and what happens?
Well, there's a few. There's I think you're referring to the one who finds the general in hiding. There's a few examples, but one, a man named Harold Baum, who actually left Berlin very late. I'm amazed that he got out. I think that they finally got to the U.S. by 41 by way of Lisbon. And they had remained in Berlin at least until 1940, which was after the war started. But he was in the 97th Division, and when his unit had occupied Solingen in the Ruhr Pocket region of Germany, he found his little squad found a general that was hiding out, and it was Gustav Adolf von Zangen, who was a general. And this guy said, he pointed his rifle at the man, and he said, Deutsche Jude, and he said the guy nearly lost control over his bowels. So
Well, no, he said he crapped his pants, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, he said he couldn't believe that out of, you know, like one little yid out of, 5 million American troops would capture him. So I thought that was pretty amusing.
Well, didn't he ask how he spoke such perfect German?
Oh, yeah, you know, where did you learn to speak German, you know, in Germany, you know, where, and this is a man named Martin Selling who said, I learned to speak German in Germany, where I'm from, and I learned to interrogate prisoners because I myself was a prisoner in Dachau, you know, just after Kristallnacht in November of 38. So, you know, there's all kinds of interesting, you know, twists of fate, if you want to call them that, you know, one of the gentlemen that I'd interviewed who recently passed away at 95 had, his name was John Brunswick, and changed his name from, you know, Hans Braunschweig to John Brunswick, and he had negotiated the surrender of the entire German army in southern Germany. He accepted the surrender from Field Marshal Kesselring, which was just the most, couldn't be more triumphant. He said that, you know, however many years, 5 years earlier, he never would have picked up after the general, and now he was asking him for the unconditional surrender. You know, it's an amazing story.
It really is an amazing story, and I cannot tell you from a personal standpoint how proud I am of you. And
you
referenced our camp, Camp Menominee, earlier in the webcast. And folks, we've had a lot of accomplished people who've come through that camp. Menominee celebrated its 80th anniversary this summer, and there's been a lot of people who have come through that camp over the years, who've done a lot of great things, but I don't think anything greater. In fact, we're going to interview one next week on Monday night, Mike Dunleavy, who came to Camp Menominee and now, of course, plays for the NBA's Indiana Pacers and won a national championship at Duke University. So you want to tune in and log on at 9 o'clock on Monday night. But of all the people that I know have accomplished great things, and there have been a lot of them, this is singularly the greatest accomplishment of any camper or counselor that I know of, and I cannot tell you how proud I am of you and just to know you and what an honor it is.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody, and they said, how long have you known Glenn? I think I've known you since I was five.
I think, and our folks knew each other, I think, before that. So.
Right. Are there any other questions? I could talk about this all night.
Yeah, what's the meaning of life, Steve? What's the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is good food, but not... not too much of it, especially if you're trying to lose weight.
Point well taken. Steve Kerr is talking to us tonight from Los Angeles, California. Continued success and good luck in getting this thing out. And you can visit Steve's website at aboutfacefilm.com. Steve, thanks again.
And let me also give you my email address if anyone wants to contact me personally about setting up a screening in California. It's Von Horn, V-O-N-H-O-R-N 29 at AOL.com.
That's a Von Horn. What's the history behind that email address? Can you share?
It's a non sequitur that actually has no meaning at all. And I just, I was 29, I think, when I created it. And I think my brother called me Von Horn one day.
That sounds like Michael. That definitely sounds
yeah,
like Michael.
Exactly.
I just out of nowhere, Von Horn.
On Horn 29. Well, thank you so much for having me on, Glenn.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate the time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we will talk to you Monday night with Mike Dunleavy, Jr. of the NBA's Indiana Pacers. And until then, this is Glenn Klein online saying, Shalom, everybody!